Welcome to the Hope Unyielding podcast. The goal of Hope Unyielding is to share God's faithfulness through the medium of personal story. I'm your host, Hope Johnson, and today I'm talking with Alicia Purdy. Alicia Purdy is a full-time writer, musician, and speaker with an MA in journalism. You can learn more about Alicia's work, including her book, The Way of the Worshipper, at her worship-based blog, thewayoftheworshipper.com. Her passion is to write about real life and a real faith and a real Jesus to inspire, encourage, and entertain people from all walks of life. Today, Alicia shares her story about God's faithfulness in her life as an unwed mother who longed to be married. She grew up as a pastor's kid in a very sheltered home. In college, she found that her sheltered childhood led to immaturity in relationships that resulted in heartbreak and rebounding. And in graduate school, she got pregnant while unmarried. Alicia shares her journey from searching for identity and fulfillment and what didn't satisfy to finally surrendering her will and desires to the Lord, how he transformed her from the inside out, and how he answered the many cries of her heart on every front. Well, Alicia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So I love your story. I've read your work and I've listened to you speak at a women's conference. I'm so excited to have you. I'd love it if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about your family, about what you do for a living.
Okay. So yeah, I'm a mom. I've got 5 kids total. We're a blended family. When I got married, my husband had 2 little children and I had 1 little son. And now we have sort of a yours, mine, and ours. We've got 2 little girls as well. So our kids range in age from 21 all the way down to 5. And I work at the Live Radio Network part-time. I am a news producer there. I do have my master's degree in journalism. Mm-hmm. But my passion is writing, definitely writing. And I wrote The Way of the Worshipper years ago because my passion, even underneath writing, is worship. I love to worship the Lord. And I really believe that worship is a misused and misunderstood spiritual weapon. And so that really spurred me forward to say, I think that people would do better to understand worship if they knew what God's heart was for worship rather than our own heart for worship. And so anyway, so yeah, I write that. I write a blog. I write on the side. I just love to write. My heart speaks through the written word. Some people, you know, everyone's got their thing. Mine is, I feel like I flow as a writer. So my family, we live here in upstate New York, but fun fact, we lived in Utah for 10 years when I got married, and I'll cover this in a little bit, but I met my husband on the internet, and so I moved to Utah after I met him on the internet, and it worked out. We're a success story of the internet.
Wow.
We blended our family. We met on the internet. We did it. We met and married in the same year. We were older, of course. I wasn't very young. I was 30 and my husband was 35. And so, yeah, God was faithful. There's a lot of pitfalls, ups and downs. And we have a beautiful life. We have a really beautiful life now that the Lord has been, he has shown himself to be faithful to us on every front. Every marriage has ups and downs. And we've had some really severe ups and downs. And I will say the right man is worth the wait.
Wonderful. That's good news for me. So your story, to me, the word that is at the center would be surrender from what I know about your story. And it's very transformative. You went through a very long season of searching. And the thing that might stand out to people the most is that you got pregnant at age 22. When you weren't married and that you grew up in a really conservative family. But you've mentioned to me before that the conservative environment you grew up in actually may have led to some naivete that led you to this. Could you talk a little bit about that environment you grew up in and the pressures and difficulties of being a pastor's kid and growing up in this Christian bubble and how it played a role in where you ended up?
It did. It did. So I will say off the top, the first thing is, my theme of my life to this day is still surrender. I'm still not very good at that. And so I am still learning to surrender day by day to the Lord, and trusting in his faithfulness. And so, yeah, I grew up in a very, let me just give you a little backstory. So my parents they came from a long history of abusive on both sides, a lot of abuse in their families. And so when they got saved, they only knew pain and destruction in their lives. And the Lord radically transformed them. I mean, they did things like cut their hair, threw the records out, threw away the makeup, wore all the long, drabby Pentecostal clothes. Well, I mean, they went really far to one side. And so into that was Alicia born. And so in there, I say this with no guile. I have no resentment toward my parents for the way they raised me. I'm thankful for it, actually, in most ways. But in their desire to protect me and my brother from all the terrible things that they had seen and walked through, the bubble was formed. And so, and there is no perfect way to raise a child. We all look back and see things our parents could have done differently. But I was very sheltered in that my entire world was the church. And not in a bad way, giving a young child, actually firmly believe in giving a young child a strong foundation in Christ. But as I've grown, I can more appreciate the concept of teaching children to be salt and light. And when I stepped into the world, I had no concept. I was in the light so much. I didn't know how to deal with certainly boys and agendas that a boy might have. I never saw it coming. I never saw it coming. And so I didn't have a date until I was in college, and I had met a completely different set of people. I could not date anybody in high school. I went to a very small Christian school. And so everything was chapel on Wednesdays and church on Sundays and Bible studies. And that was all I really knew about anything. I wasn't allowed to watch movies. In fact, I had to sign a contract for school saying I wouldn't watch certain movies. So a lot of things that happened in the world that maybe other kids understand how to deflect or rationalize caught me hook, line, and sinker. And so, and some of them were not drugs. Thank the Lord. He saved me from things like drugs and alcohol, because I was in that bubble till I was almost fully grown. I was 18. So I went to college and I got caught up in some relationships that weren't bad. But looking back, there were people who I would say let me give you a little story. I didn't understand the politics of dating. And I look back now and I can verbalize this, but I didn't know at the time that if someone bought me dinner, I thought I had to kiss them. So something like that, which is a very antiquated and sexist thing to think. And my parents never, ever said that to me, but they never said anything about it, period. And so when someone would pressure me, I would cave to that pressure. And it took me years to figure that out and to grow the kind of spine I needed to protect myself. My parents didn't tell me, they just told me not to have sex. That's it, hard stop. They didn't say anything about, but if you do, if you fall into sin or you find yourself in trouble, run, protect yourself, anything, insist on a condom, nothing. I could have had any number of disease. I look back in awe of the Lord. I think, Lord, you saved me from myself because I was so naive, truly. I knew nothing. So when I got to college, I had a terrible breakup with somebody that was the first person that I ever slept with. My parents had no idea, of course. And a story for another day is that this is going to sound crazy, but I did not know the first time I had sex that that's what I had. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
I didn't understand that that's what happened because that person convinced me that that's not what that was. And I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
And so they said, oh no, in order for it to really be sex, it has to be this thing. And I was like, oh, okay. I just blushed thinking about it. and that's just such a real story of, again, I love my parents and very much so. And I approve of almost everything they did actually for me as parents, but they left me high and dry in that way. They just told me not to. And that did not help me. So after that breakup where I didn't understand, I made a soul tie to that person. I had no idea because I didn't know I had somebody, a friend from public school, come to me and say, a close, close friend. And I kind of described what we had done in the relationship. And she said, you had sex with him? And I said, no, 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 I wouldn't do that. So she said to me, did you ever take a health class? And I said, no. She said, did you ever... Oh my goodness. Okay. Let's start from the beginning. And so, and this loving friend said, Alicia, this is what you did. And this is why it hurts so badly. You have a soul tie with this person. And that shook me. And I thought, that's why I'm depressed. I can't move forward. I like want to stalk them. And just all of the things that come with being abruptly dumped when I didn't realize I had tied a part of myself to this person. So from that breakup, I couldn't shake it. I really spiraled downward, and I graduated right in that moment. I graduated from college and went into grad school. As soon as I got to graduate school, that was an even bigger pond. Now I met people from the military, and it was a military base was there, and I was going out with friends. And so I got swept up again into another relationship, and it was very much, very much a rebound relationship. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was a one-night stand. Mm-hmm. Didn't know what those were at the time, but that's essentially what it was. It was mm-hmm. somebody that I had no intention of. I just wanted to have fun, and I was hurting, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to feel better. And this person was nice enough, and they weren't a random stranger. They were somebody I had met several times through friends, and they liked me, and it felt good. So when that opportunity presented itself, I took it. That's what happened. And again, I still didn't know enough. I didn't. It never even crossed my mind to ask for a condom. Mm-hmm. Never. I didn't even really know this person that well. They could have been anybody. And it was from that moment that I got pregnant. That one night I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And my parents were horrified. They were mm-hmm. very upset. I did consider abortion, and the Lord sent somebody at that time, but truly a random neighbor came down mm-hmm. and said, "Why are you crying?" And when I said, "I just found out I'm pregnant," they said, "Don't have an abortion." Mm-hmm. And they sat down and they ministered to me right in that moment. And they said, "Alicia, you will get through this. You have loving parents. You have a support system. You're 22. Mm-hmm. You're not 15.
Right.
They said, "You can do this," and your parents will be upset. And they really prepared me. And they said, mm-hmm. "Your parents are going to flip out, and the people in your church, you might be humiliated. You're going to be talked about." And they said, "But this is a human being." And they, you know what? I knew all those things. Mm-hmm. I grew up picketing abortion clinics once a month with my school. Mm-hmm. And so my parents were arrested right in front of me and taken to jail for picketing abortion and diving in front of doors. Like, this is how I grew up in a very Pentecostal evangelical mm-hmm. life. And I didn't know any different. So when she spoke words that had already been implanted. I knew this was a human life. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make the mistake go away, which is right. something we all struggle with. And so she really saved my son's life. And I did go home and face my parents, and they were very upset. And it was a difficult, difficult road. And they weren't even as upset for, they weren't upset that I was pregnant per se, but they had been there, and they had tried to stop me my whole life. And so to find out that sense of all they sacrificed, all they did for me, they even started a school so I could attend it. My brother and I could attend it. And it was a Christian school, and they did it to save me from the same trauma and pain that they had walked through, similar situations. And so the look in their face was priceless. The horror of, I can't believe it. So, and it, the church responded in two ways. Some were extremely gracious, like, "Hey, look, we all have a past." Mm-hmm. And then there were definitely people like, "For someone given every advantage in life, you go and do this. Mm-hmm. Could you slap your parents and Jesus Christ in the face more with your filthy behavior?" It was that way from the Christians went one of two ways.
Okay.
I had to go back to grad school. I made it through grad school. I was pregnant. Everybody knew I went to a Christian graduate school. I was in the journalism program. People knew who I was, and I had to show up pregnant. And people were, again, one of two ways, very gracious mm-hmm. or very hateful and critical and judgmental. And my parents walked with me through that. And, you know, as a single mom, it changed my life. Everything in my career, I set my career aspirations aside, and I had to raise my son and do these things, but I had a complete and full support system. The problem was I still had what was in me, that sense of rejection or mm-hmm. whatever that was I was struggling with that led me down the entire messy path hadn't been fixed. Mm-hmm. And so now it was even worse. Now, instead of just being a person, now I have baggage.
Right.
Now someone my age is going to look at me, especially a man of God who wants a beautiful virgin on his wedding night. Mm-hmm. Well, the cat's out of the bag. I'm not only am I not a virgin, but you'll be raising someone else's kid. Mm-hmm. And the enemy just used that to beat me up mm-hmm. for years. And it led me to another string of bad decisions mm-hmm. because it was at that point I was almost grateful to have a date. Because I was so convinced. And people did say to me, there were people who actually said, men, "Yeah, but I don't want a kid."
Right. Okay.
It did happen mm-hmm. many times, actually. And so I drastically lowered my standards and started dating people who were nice, but they weren't Christians, but they were willing to accept my child because, hey, well, you know, they're all out there having sex and dating people and they don't care. But I was looking for forever.
Right.
And that hurt. And I made more strings of bad decisions. And I have to say, in the midst of those decisions, I still never asked for a condom. I look back with shock. Like anything could have happened to me because the level of shelteredness, it was just not ingrained in me to protect myself in any way, shape, or form. By the grace of God, I'm okay. But I look back, I could have gotten pregnant again.
Right.
In fact, I did actually have a pregnancy scare after that. And I thought the only thing worse than getting pregnant and being unwed the first time is doing it a second time. Mm-hmm. And again, I considered abortion. I wasn't pregnant, praise God. But it still didn't teach me the lesson. What taught me the lesson was being broken. I truly was broken from a relationship where I was finally ready to look at who I was, what had led me to this point, and how can, okay, Lord, I'm finally ready to listen. Show me who I am, which is a huge step for me. Show me who I am. Where are my gaps that keep leading me to this? And I am ready for you to help me fix them. I'll do the work.
So talk a little bit more about what brought you to that point of surrender. You know, as much as you're comfortable about that relationship and what made you realize, no, I'm not going down this path.
Okay. So I met somebody and, I will refer to them as Jack. That is not their name. So I met Jack and in a bar, actually, because I was still noodling around, trying to be single. So I was about 26 and I was in this phase of life where, you know, growing up sheltered, I never went out and did anything. If I went anywhere, I was going to youth group and playing ping pong and eating Doritos. And that's all I ever did. I didn't go or I went to a Christian movie somewhere. That's it. And so I didn't go to bars and hang out. I didn't have groups of friends like that who could maybe just have one beer and talk all night. I just didn't know that world. And so if I had a beer, I was having 8 beers and falling on the floor because I didn't know how to drink beer. And I just life just came at me in a way that I didn't see coming. And so, you know what? And to this day, actually, there's a naivete about me. I actually hate practical jokes because I buy them every time. A hook, line, and sinker. So the Lord has shown me that the naivete is a gift inside of me. But I need to shelter it and to guard my heart, like the Bible says, we're out of it full of the issues of life. And so that's still part of my journey is drawing the line between people taking advantage of me and me being soft before the Lord and receptive to things also, which is a gift. So I met this man, Jack, at this bar, and he was in a band. And, you know, we got talking. Come to find out, this will probably surprise nobody, he was also a pastor's kid, very much fallen from the Lord. But we made that point of connection, sort of a pain point in each other where he had been incredibly sheltered and had gone, he had even been homeschooled. So it was even worse. He'd been homeschooled and I'd been to a small Christian school and we both had, you know, life in the big city. And he was very angry and bitter toward the Lord for a series of pain in his life. And I was more hating myself. I didn't hate the Lord. I was angry and bitter at myself. And so in that anger and bitterness on both sides, we came together and really related to each other. And I remember the very first night we stayed up all night and we talked and talked and talked and made these connections. We had so many points of similarity. So we fell into a relationship and he was okay. He was more than okay with my son. He loved my son actually. And so I thought, this is my man. He's got blue hair. He's covered in tattoos. He's in a band and he loves the Lord and will take my son. Sold. I'll take him. So what happened? And we traveled together and did all these things and we still fell sexually. He had a total past that was way worse than mine. But he was trying to do better and I was trying to do better. But then we sort of had that thing where you think, well, we're probably going to get married anyway.
Right.
That is a trap. Never fall into that, please, at all costs. It's not going to happen because I didn't marry him. And now he's part of my story. I had to tell my actual husband when I said, okay, so there was this guy too. So what happened when I really fell in love with him and we talked about getting married and something changed. I don't know what, till this day, I don't know what changed, but something changed. And I really started to be more serious about the Lord. Not even in a way, I was like secretly reading my Bible in the morning and trying to draw near to the Lord. And I was trying to have talks with him about that, like we had in those early days. And I could sense he was pulling back or holding back. And I just wanted more. I just wanted more in my life. I don't know how else to explain it. The Lord was beckoning me clearly. And so, and I was turning toward that, and the dividing line became, when we first got together, I thought he was turning back too. And that's essentially what we had talked about was, yeah, I want to find my way back to the Lord, but I meant it when I said it. Mm-hmm. I was done, you know, kind of like, okay, I don't want to sleep with people. I don't want to, I hate being drunk. I'm just, this is not the life for me. I just not. And so we had a really long talk one night, and essentially what he said was, I'm not in, and this is, you know, we've had a year together of travel and experiences, and we were looking at wedding venues, actually. I didn't have a ring yet, but we were in those early stages, and we had these discussions, and he sort of drew that line and said, you know what? I'm not ready, actually. I still have a couple things that I have not reconciled, and I am not interested in a God who will blah, 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 or in a God who doesn't blah, blah, blah. Or, and he had some really deep abiding questions. And unlike me, I was willing to pursue the answer. Mm-hmm. I'm a journalist. That is what we do. We ask why, and then we go find out why. Mm-hmm. And so, but he wasn't, he was stuck in why. And so I really felt like the Lord had said to me, break up with him. Now, I could not do that. I could not. I travailed with, I felt in my spirit a breaking, and I was like, no, 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 I can't lose him. And so I chickened out and I said to him, let's take a break. And after a month, we'll come back together and just like reevaluate, whatever. And I fasted during that time. And I was like, the Lord's bringing him back and I can see the future and all these things. And I called him at the 1 month mark. He, not only did he not get back to me, but finally I called his mother and she said, he's moved on with his life. Please leave us alone. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I thought I'd had a word from the Lord. Hard stop. We were getting, we're, this was going to work out. He had the soul of David. I had all this prophetic anointing in me that I felt like God was saying, which I had to confront much later. How did I miss God so widely? But anyway, so the Lord had told me, he had given me a word to walk away. I did not obey that word. And had I obeyed it, I think the pain would have been a lot greatly reduced if I had made that break. Mm-hmm. But instead I chickened out and he made that break. And I tracked him on social media in that time, and he was very obviously sleeping with somebody. Very obvious, like dirty pictures and all these things. And I was so broken by that. I threw up actually the day that I saw that, because I truly in my heart of hearts believed I was going to marry him. Mm-hmm. And that was based on a word from God, which is, how can you argue with that? It was a word from God. And so I was so devastated. I actually had to seek counseling because I could not let it go. And it shipwrecked me. But during that time that I was seeking true healing, the Lord didn't just heal me from that relationship. He healed me from everything. And I was like, and I remember saying, I remember in the car one day, I was just so angry. And I was like, I gave him up for you. I gave him up. What have you ever done for me? And instantly my spirit, I felt like the Lord said, I gave up my son. You cannot give me. Mm-hmm. And it struck me very hard. And I thought, okay, well played, Lord. You sent Jesus. And I literally could never outgive that. So based on the knowledge of that, me giving up this person and releasing them in order to pursue you, then I will make that my point of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And it was very hard, and I had to stop calling. I would drive past his house. I mean, everything crazy that a crazy ex-girlfriend would do, that's what I did. I would bring Christmas gifts. I would let myself into their house. I did crazy stuff for 2 years. I would cry out to God. I fasted and prayed. I tracked him on social media. And so I would call prayer chains around the U.S. I would call these ministries and be like, please pray for this person. They're stuck in a life of, you know, sin and debauchery. And they would be like, okay, let's pray. It's just, I was desperate for this person. Huh. And again, a large part of that was the sexual connection, which was, I crossed a boundary again and again tied my soul to another. I made the same classic mistake. I tied my soul again to somebody. And so over those couple of years leading forward till I actually did get married, that was a long healing process where the Lord had to show me who I was. And that, not in a good way, not in my identities in Christ, in a bad way. The Lord had to say, you have some serious shortcomings here, or gaps in your understanding, or pain and rejection, or whatever those things are. And I need you to shore those up if you're going to move ahead. And that's what was so hard. And that's what really broke me, was I was serious when I said I wanted to pursue God, and I faltered and I failed, but I had said to the Lord, what we all say, whatever you need to do, Lord, to make me more like you. Mm-hmm. And the Lord kept reminding me that, and I felt like the Lord kept saying, you said whatever I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And I would say, okay, then I guess this is what I'll just take and keep moving. And I did, but I did have to seek natural healing too. I did. I saw a counselor to help me through because I became very depressed. Mm-hmm. I wasn't taking care of my son. I didn't want to go to work. I could not crawl out of that hole. And so that did help me. I sought spiritual help. I sought help from a pastor. I talked to wiser women in my life who had just been there, done that. Mm-hmm. And hearing that wisdom of the multitude of counselors helped me piece together some gaps that I, maybe things I had questions about. And I began to reflect and realize, yeah, he really did have everything that I wanted at that time in a person. But you know what? What I wanted was wrong.
Mm.
And that's what I had to look at. I had to confront the fact that my expectations were not God's expectations. And I'd held those my whole life. I always wanted a hot rocker roll man covered in tattoos. Mm. And that was him. Mm-hmm. And I did not marry one. But I married somebody who could not be more me. Mm. And I realize now, like I said, what I was looking for, my list was wrong.
Mm.
My list was way off. And God, over those next few years, as I submitted to him and sought help and helped myself and reflected and turned to his word and reinforced it, all of it, fasting, prayer, whatever, it was worth the work. Because not only did he change me, but he changed my expectations, and then he was able to give me what he wanted for me.
Hmm.
So
I'd love to hear a little bit about that process, how you met your husband and okay. How, I mean, I love that story. I've read about that a bit. So could you share that?
Sure. Yeah. So the short version is we met on the internet. Mm-hmm. So after those 3 years, so it was about 3 years. So, this man and I had separated, and the healing process, I didn't mean it to be 3 years necessarily, but that's about how long it took. At the end of those 3 years was actually this man's birthday. And I had said to the Lord, I'm going to wait and keep myself for him for 3 years. I don't know why. That's like the time frame I had set mm-hmm. in my mind. And now I look back, it was the Holy Spirit, but that's what I said. I don't like giving God numbers. I really actually think that's a bad thing to do. But in my heart, I said, okay, I'm going to give him 3 years and I know he's going to come back. I was still standing actually in faith, but I was also doing the healing process mm-hmm. to depart from him. And the more that I stood in faith, I mean, the more that I made that departure from him, somebody in that multitude of counselors said, they actually told me to stop praying for him.
Mm.
They said, prayer binds your heart to another person. It makes you care. And they said, I want you to stop praying for him. And that really helped, to be honest with you, is when I thought about him, I actually didn't pray about him. I used to cry up to God and travail on my knees, whatever. And they were like, stop. The Lord wants to heal you from that. And you have to truly let go.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did that, even though I was like secretly waiting, I didn't date anybody that whole time. I threw myself into friendships and got a much beautiful, richer life. I started a book club and I just did all these fun things that were part of me. Oddly, never ran into him again in those 3 years. That was an act of mercy of the Lord. But at the end of those 3 years, it was his birthday. And I actually allowed myself to troll him on social media. It was MySpace back in those days. And you know what I realized that day on his birthday? It was the final straw. I had really realized how healed I was because I saw him on social media. And not only was he not with the Lord at all, but he actually had told a very filthy sexual story about me on the internet. And I found it that day. He didn't name my name, but I was there and I knew it was me. And I was horrified.
Hmm.
Thank God he didn't mention my name, but I knew that was me because the police had been involved. It's a long story. But I realized like in that moment, the Holy Spirit, I felt like it was the revelation of the Holy Spirit to say, see, you've moved on and you've healed mm-hmm. and you're ready to move ahead. And he's still stuck. And you could still, if you had not, you know, departed from him and all these things, look where you would be. And I will mm-hmm. say this 15 years later, he's still there.
Hmm.
And so, praise the Lord. But anyway, so at the end of that, I really was truly healed. That was like that final closing of the chapter. Like I just had to see for myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was healed. I really was truly healed. And I thought, okay, well, that clearly wasn't for me. And there's no hope. And I had given up hope and I had given that to God and he'd replaced a new hope. So I thought, okay, I'm going to move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easy at that point because I had spent 3 years seeking healing and it wasn't like I had to re-heal. Nope. It was over. So I walked away from that. And that was 2007. It was August of 2007. And But I did all those, during those years, I started to wonder, Lord, do you have somebody else for me? Mm-hmm. Who could that person be? And I told you the Lord was slowly adjusting that list. And I thought, okay, you can adjust it. And I actually wrote out a list, a physical list. I was like, you gotta be hot, Lord. He's gotta be tall, 6'4". He's gotta have blonde hair. I mean, I was very specific. Hmm. I was like, he needs to have these things and also some, you know, qualifications. I'd like him to play the guitar. I'd like him to be a man. I had this whole list, right? And so, I secretly went on the internet. I was lonely and my dad had said, oh, why don't you get dressed? You never do your hair. I worked from home. I had a really good job working from home as a journalist, actually. And I never had to leave the house and I was perpetually in sweatpants with a greasy bun in my hair. And my dad said, get dressed. And I said, I'm going to meet the man I'm going to marry. Well, I'm sitting on the couch in this greasy bun. And my dad was like, please, please just go out and meet somebody. And so I went on the internet, not for any other reason than someone said I should. And I was too embarrassed to do it. And so I didn't tell anybody. And I went and signed up for eHarmony, filled out their profile. And then I went and signed up for Christian Mingle. Again, I didn't tell anybody. And then lot of weirdos.
Oh, believe me. I've been there. Yes. Yes.
And at that time, I was actually getting a little more and more desperate. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, Lord, I spent all this time getting healed. I have a list. I know you're in it. I'm a fully grown, mature. I emerged from this as a butterfly. Like I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. Where is he? And so I actually had decided I was going to leave the country with my son. I thought, you know what? I'm approaching 30. And I thought, if this is, actually I was 30 at that time. And I thought, you know what? Marriage is not the end all be all of my life. Mm-hmm. I am more than just marriage material. I am someone who wants to travel and I want to learn mm-hmm. another language and I want to do these things. And I thought, so what if I have a son? Like he can come with me and we're just going to be travelers. So I went and got a passport. I applied to the Hillsong Music College in Australia mm-hmm. and my parents were looking into all the things you need, schooling, all the different things you need to make it in another country. And, but I was also still on the internet. So I had met a few people. I even went on a few physical dates in the area, nothing major and no more stumbling. Thank the Lord. I was finally ready to protect myself on every level and say, you don't get to touch me there. I don't care if you paid for dinner. Mm-hmm. You can take a step back or we can fight. Those are your choices. Mm-hmm. I really had developed that uh-huh. thicker skin. No one was taking advantage of me now. And, so my husband reached out to me. He had been spammed in his spam folder and he was cleaning his spam folder out and it said something he never signed up for. Christian Mingle said, we found your match. And he thought, what is this? What? I never even signed up. So he clicked on it and my picture popped up mm-hmm. and he thought, well, who is that lady? So he clicked on it and it was me. And so he sent me a little note or however you do it on their little system. And when I saw his picture, first of all, he's the hottest guy out of all of them that had ever reached out to me. Didn't even compare to the other ones, but he was divorced. Mm-hmm. And that was not on my list. In fact, that was actually on a different list of things I will not accept. Mm-hmm. And so, because I think that's knowing what you want, you have to also know what you will not, what your right. non-negotiables are. You have to know both. And they're a separate list entirely. And in my mind, I thought I will not accept a divorced man and I don't want his baggage and I don't want his crazy ex-wife and I don't want his crazy ex-in-laws and I just don't want it in my life. Mm-hmm. And so, I secretly finally went to somebody that I trusted and said, okay, this really hot guy hits every point on my list. Except he's also on my no list because of the divorce. Mm-hmm. And so she said to me, you know, you have a kid, right? She said, how high can your standards be that you would expect someone to accept your child, but you mm-hmm. wouldn't accept theirs? Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a while. She said, he hits every, Alicia, he has the same faith. He's a worship leader. She was like, Alicia, you're crazy. He's gorgeous. And so I did reach back to him. And just to tell you in brief, so he lived in Utah. And once that spark was made, we communicated for a few weeks, and somebody came to me and said, asking these two questions, does he tithe and is he spirit filled? And I was like, okay, it's a kind of heavy hitter type question. And everybody always says no. And you know, but anyway, I thought, so I did. I asked him those two questions and I did it on instant message, but he just started to spout off scriptures and talk to me about his testimony. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I really felt like a witness inside that like, this guy is too hot to be true, but he hits all my points. I can't believe it. Uh-huh. And so I knew, I actually got up from that table and I went to my parents and I said, I feel a witness in my spirit that that's him. Hmm. And they were like, he's in Utah. You're crazy. He's going to bury you in an unmarked grave. Like they went crazy that he was on the internet. Nobody knew. It came out of left field. I was like, by the way, I met somebody on the internet. And I think I'm going to marry them. And they were like, your desperation has driven you crazy. And so after a couple of weeks, he was being flown because of business into Boston. And he said, would you want to meet up public, you know, public. We met at an ecotarium and it was really fun. It was a kids museum and we had a great day and we went to a restaurant. We stayed in public, all of it. It was immediate. Hmm. It was immediate. And so as soon as I saw him in person and he was 6'4", blonde hair, blue eyes, I mean, I was like, Lord, is this a suddenly season? Because I think this is him. And so we had such a, he had brought his guitar and we sat and we worshiped. I mean, like, it was just everything I ever wanted it to be. And we both left that day. And he to himself thought, well, I live in Utah and I have two small children. And I thought, well, he lives in Utah and I live in New York. And he has a whole testimony of where God, turns out that 3 years of waiting, he was doing the same thing I was. He was healing.
Wow.
He had sought healing from his divorce. He had wanted to walk away from that marriage. So his wife divorced him and he needed to seek that healing. Mm-hmm. He was devastated. He waited for her for 2 years until she married someone else. And then he sought that healing. So during that 3 year period while I was healing, my faithful God was healing my husband at the same time so that we could meet each other. And I had started to pray for my husband, whoever that man might be, in that healing time, those 3 years, I started to pray for a husband, not just Jack, this man. I really turned it into whoever this man is, as God was creating this list in me. I started to pray for him. What's he doing today, Lord? I know he's out there. I know he's putting his shoes on. Bless his finances. Bless his day. Show him this. Protect his eyes from looking at anything filthy today, Lord. Protect his heart from... And I really started to pray for my husband. And so, so he went to work on Monday and they came to him and said, hey, we have a contract in Albany, New York for the next year. Could we fly you there to take care of some business for the next year? And my husband was like, okay, Lord, I'm listening. And so for about the next 10 months of our dating, we met. That little spark from the dating service was in January. We met in person in February. Mm-hmm. And right now we're in the month of February. So our little met in person anniversary is actually in 2 days. And, which we celebrate heavily because it was really that day of realizing God has brought this us to this point. And we were married in October of that year. So we met, we dated and we married. And you know what? Yes, I met him on the internet, but the Lord financed our dating. The Lord flew him here from Utah every 2 weeks where he would fly for 2 weeks and stay for a week. And, he did that for the next 10 months. So he met my church. He met my family. They got to know his character. He stayed in the homes of my friends and they beat him up one side up and down the other. And who are you? And what's your story? And does anything conflict? Did he tell us any lie? I mean, they grilled my husband and passed all the tests. And I had a huge party. I made everybody meet him the day he flew into town. Once we kind of realized this was a thing. And I got calls from so many people afterward. I put him through the ringer. I invited like 30 people. I was like, you ask him anything. And so I was like, I want to know, is he a murderer? So my closest friends called me later and they were crying and they were like, that's him.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So the Lord was not only faithful to change my heart, he brought me out of this dark pit and all these things, but I look back, there was a whole human being out there that was walking through his own journey. And the Lord made sure that when we were at the end and at that meeting point happened, we were two fully healed, fully grown spiritually, mature human beings that were people of God and able to look at each other and say, we're ready in this. You're the one. And so really it was miraculous. And that's why I say the right one is worth waiting for. When you're praying for them, you're seeking God, whatever. Yeah. I had to like put a little thing out on the internet. I didn't want to, but God, you know, I'm not going to qualify what God can use anymore. I'm just not after that experience, but it wasn't the internet. It truly was the Lord because, I was open to listen, that naivete. I was open to taking advice from people that I trust. I finally had learned to take it from people I trusted. And God was so faithful that he was in the works the whole time where I was trying, feeling in the darkness. Where is this man, Lord? I don't know. And someone had sent me a word right before I left for Australia. Somebody sent me a word. It was actually my mother, which we don't listen to our mothers and we all know that. And she said to me, Alicia, hold on just a little bit longer. Don't leave. She's like, I really believe you're in the threshold of a door. And she said, I see a door in my mind and you're going to step through this door. And God, and I was like, it isn't true. God doesn't listen. I was really in that low place. I'm like, he doesn't hear my heart cry. Turns out my husband had made a list of 75 things in that time.
Wow. 75.
75. That's my husband. And I met 73. And the only two things I didn't meet was I am afraid of bugs. He didn't want someone afraid of bugs. I really have a problem with bugs. And I can't stand camping.
Okay.
He wanted somebody who would camp. And you know what? He was shocked because he went back to he did the same thing. Go ahead, Lord, prove yourself in the word. Prove yourself. Here's a list. You want a list? Oh, here's a list. I'll outlist God. And he made this massive list to say to God, prove it. You prove this person. You prove you hear me. And so he had pulled that list out and he just wept. He was like, he said he read every item on the list and was like, oh my gosh, she's even the height I wanted. And I said to him, you're even the height I wanted. I just couldn't believe it. And so, you know, we all have a different journey like that, but God had led me to pray a very specific prayer because he wanted me to recognize this man when I saw him. Yeah. And the same thing with him. And I really believe that God has those people for his people, that the more we submit and we let ourselves be healed and let God show us who we are, that and that other person is yielded and surrendered and says, I'm not a perfect, I'm still surrendering. Believe me. I have this miraculous testimony and yet I still struggle to surrender. That's a lifelong journey, but I have seen the goodness of God in that surrender, that he can be trusted. Mm-hmm. I was praying for my husband. My husband, I didn't know. He was healing from a divorce. I didn't know that.
Right.
I would pray for him every day. You don't know what they're going through. Maybe they're healing from cancer. Maybe they've had a difficulty. Maybe they came from a life of abuse and God needs to heal them because they need to yield and surrender. And so that was my prayer. Lord, help him to be a man that yields to you, a man of the word, a man of surrender. And I began to pray those things over his life. And when we looked back and saw that journey, I was like, that's what he was doing that whole time. And he was praying for me. Hmm. And so saying the same thing. Anyway, so I firmly believe in the miraculous power of God to hear the cry of a heart. And then once he hears that, he does have a plan and we have the choice whether or not we're just going to see through a glass darkly and continually to turn to him. That's it. There's no easy answer there. Mm-hmm. It's all darkness because that's the enemy and just life. But God is always working and we can trust that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the point of surrender is. I don't know. But if you say it, I'm going to search for it. I'm going to study it. I'm going to believe it. And then I'm going to live by it. And that's what I did. So it's not some testimony to me. It's a testimony to the goodness of God to stick with me.
Yeah.
As I was groping in the darkness.
Yeah.
Just to whisper in my ear. Like he says, this is the way I walk in it. And so anyway.
Well, I think that's incredibly encouraging to anyone who has been crying out and feeling, God, do you hear me? It looks, seems like you hear other people, but have I just fallen through the cracks? You know I've felt like that and a lot of my friends have. And I just love that you had this parallel journey with your future husband and you had no idea about that and you did feel abandoned. But then when he showed you what he was doing, wow, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I love that.
I really don't believe anyone falls through the cracks with God. And I really think that's a lie of the enemy that we all fall through. We all struggle with that. Mm-hmm. That someone else's success story, that's theirs and it's to them, or they're a little more special, or they have a greater purpose than I have, which is why God needed to do that. That is such a lie. I absolutely don't believe that at all. And I was doing the same thing. And so I was doing the same thing in my head and my heart. But I think if there's anything that I did, quote unquote, right, it was I did not give up. I was like, I will pursue to the end. And then I really did decide that if I couldn't find somebody, I'm not the sum total of a marriage.
Right.
And that was a revelation to me to say, Alicia, so you get married and then what? You forget that you wanted to do this thing in your life? You forget, you just forsake learning another language or traveling or trying to cook something or, you know, running for a political office or all these little, I wanted to go back to school and go to law school. There are other things that make me who I am.
Right.
I want to record music. I like to go running. I wanted to run a marathon. And I was sitting by twiddling my thumbs, waiting for a man to validate my existence. And a friend of mine was doing the same thing. Anyway, she decided to give up her life and go to India. And she met and married a man in India who was 6'4" and was a doctor, is a doctor, and had been waiting for a beautiful American woman, didn't want an Indian woman, and had been on their journey. And when she called and said, I met an Indian man, I said, does he look like Gandhi? Because you're 6 feet tall. And I said, is he just a little small Indian man? And she said, oh no, let me send you a picture.
Wow.
And he was wearing a New York Yankees baseball cap and riding a motorcycle. And he was very, more like a Western thinking person because he had been very educated. And so she moved on with her life. She was like working in an orphanage and taking care of little Indian babies that had been left on the road. And she had thought the same thing I did, which was, you know what? I have other things that interest me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lean into those. And while she was busy, this man showed up on a motorcycle and she almost rejected him. She was like, I don't want an Indian man. And so, and he won her over and she realized she had a heart for India. And now that God had opened a door and brought her someone from the culture she loved, all these different things. And so I really felt like, you know what, maybe I'll marry somebody in Australia. That's what I thought. I thought, you know, Lord, maybe he's there. So I say just, you're more than the sum total of, you know, of a man in your life. And yes, that is a longing heart cry. I get it. All I'm saying is the more well-rounded of a woman you are, the better you have to bring to that man. You don't come in as a 50% and a 50%. You're a 100.
Yeah.
And this man's a, cry out to God for this man. God will raise him up to 100, wherever he is in his life right now. So you come in as two full 100s. You're like, yeah, I speak Russian. I ran for political office one time. Yes, I've been to law school. I've actually traveled the world several times. Mm-hmm. And he comes in and says, yeah, so have I. Mm-hmm. You know, and you both are like, yes, let's get married. You're the one for me.
I mean, one of the things I started praying about a year ago was, Lord, bring me through what you need me to bring me through to be the woman he's praying for.
That is a dangerous prayer.
And it's been quite the year. It's been quite the year. But, you know, as I'm looking back on what he's done, I do see, wow, you know, he has brought me through to a point kind of like where you were, where I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to be sitting around twiddling my thumbs. And that's, in the long run, if I do get married, and hopefully I do, that's going to be more of a blessing to him.
Yeah. You won't be a Rapunzel who just sat there all day and grew her hair waiting for the prince to climb the wall. You're down here and you're in the trenches. Like, I'm actually doing this work and I'm planning this trip and I have to do this, these things. And this man is going to, he's not going to, the right man for you, if these are your aspirations, it's not going to tie you down now and you're going to have a million kids. Now, having children has been its own adventure.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
But, I'm just not somebody. Now, somebody else might say, the only thing I ever want to do in my life is be a homemaker. Mm-hmm. Then that man is out there. That provider man, you need to pray for him to have a good job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You need to make sure that he is a man, because you don't want to ever, ever, ever marry a man who would make a good husband. You marry a man who would make a good father. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge difference between the two, because lots of people love their wives and are not good fathers to their children, their own children or stepchildren. I needed to cry out to God for a man who could love another person's child. And he had to cry out for a woman who would mother his two young children. Mm-hmm. And that's a more mature prayer that people pray when you realize this isn't just about me. If I see forever in this, in this relationship, I need a man who will play. I want a man, this should go on your list. You know, a man who will play with my children on the floor and teach my kids things and get my kids under the car, or whatever those values are that you see in your life. You don't just need a husband, you actually need a father.
Right.
And that's another facet of that multifaceted prayer. And so, and that was something that I was praying for in a husband, that I didn't want just a stepfather for my son. I wanted an actual father because his own father was not really present in his life, and my son needed a father. My dad had done a wonderful job helping raise, while I lived at home, helping raise my son, but he needed a dad. So to this day, my husband's out there under the car with my son. They go for walks. My husband takes him out. They go on like little days. They go for coffee.
Yeah.
They argue. I mean, all of it. The whole thing. And when my son needs to talk about a girl or whatever those things, that he doesn't talk to me. He goes to my husband. He doesn't want to talk to mom. He wants to talk to dad. And so that has been another tremendous answer to prayer. I didn't think I'd ever have children. My son would be raised alone. Well, guess what? My husband had children that were my son's exact age. I thought my son will never have siblings his own age. Yeah, maybe I'll have more kids, but he'll always be 8 years older than everybody.
Yeah.
When I got married, my kids were 6, 7, and 8. And so I felt like the Lord said to me one day, Alicia, do you even remember that you were afraid? Even a tiny little prayer that I don't think I even wrote down, that I just had designed that my son would always be kind of that older. You see a family picture and it would be a 17-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I guess, you know, and he'd never have that. Well, guess what? That's not what happened. God brought me two children that I was able to raise alongside my son, and they fought and they played and they dressed up in costumes and they danced and they made up songs and they went out in the backyard and built snow for. It just endlessly warmed my heart to know that it was a small request that I don't even think had been on my list for my son to have siblings. I had just let it go, and God brought it to me.
Wow.
So he hears even the little things. I didn't even write it down and tell anybody, but it was like a deeply held one, and he heard that one too. So whatever that is,
wow,
he hears it. So,
man, well, I'm fired up now. Thank you so much for this encouragement. I know it's going to encourage everybody who listens.
Yeah, he can be trusted. He can be trusted. Yeah. That's how I also put it. So whatever he says to do, do it.
Man, that's a word.
Yeah.
That's a good place to end. And I'd love to connect people who are listening more to your writing. Would you be able to tell listeners how they can track with you and connect with the Way of the Worshipper?
Yeah, so absolutely. You can go to thewayoftheworshipper.com for sure. And there's newsletters and freebies, and it all is around the subject of worship specifically. And that, so that's thewayoftheworshipper.com, and that worshipper has two P's. That actually does matter. It's a little grammatical argument I have with people all the time. It is Way of the Worshipper with two P's. Or I actually do have a secondary website I'm slowly populating with other work, mm-hmm. as I'm separating out the ministry from my journalism work. And it's actually PurdyAlicia.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you can visit me at PurdyAlicia.com. Mm-hmm. I'm also on Facebook.
Okay, great. And I'll put that all in the show notes as well. Great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Alicia.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning into Hope Unyielding. If you enjoyed this episode, please pass it on to someone you think it will encourage. Also, write us a review on Apple Podcasts, as it really helps us to get the word out. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope to see you next time.